Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
Hi, everybody. My name's Sue Supriano, and I'm very happy to be with Terry Swearinger, who is an activist par excellence and has actually had a huge amount of success and actually got the Goldman Prize for her activism, basically. And she's stopped incinerator, toxic waste incinerator in her community, and had a big impact on the whole United States. And Terry, it's so incredible that you've done this work. And there's as you were mentioning earlier in a speech I just heard you give, activists are really totally overextended. Of course, there's not enough of us. And your story is so wonderful because you did so many creative things. And I would like you to share it once again with the audience, if you would, with the listening audience, because you live in West Virginia and right on the border of Ohio. And you pressured, actually, the governor of Ohio. But tell the story. We don't have a lot of time, so but do tell it yourself and some of the things about what you did.
Well, Sue, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to share the information with the rest of the public. I believe that that's what we need is more people involved and to know that, you know, really an incinerator in East Liverpool, Ohio can affect people all across the country because pollution knows no boundaries. So we really need all the help we can get. And there's just one thing that I'd like to mention is that although we have been very successful in our efforts because we've caused the governor of Ohio to implement a moratorium for all new incinerators in the state that continues today, and we've made national policy changes in combustion regulations and a first-time dioxin emission limit under RCRA. But unfortunately, the WTI incinerator that I've been struggling with for about 11 years now is actually still burning in East Liverpool. The interesting thing about this incinerator is that 8 years ago, during the campaign, Governor Clinton and Senator Gore, during the presidential campaign bus tour, made the WTI incinerator one of their issues. They made it a campaign issue. They spoke out about 20 miles downriver from East Liverpool, Ohio, a little community, Weirton, West Virginia. I'm
just going to interrupt you for 1 second. I should have said this before. I do this all the time, but I just want to make an impression on people. If you don't understand that when you're burning toxic waste, it's quite horrible, and I'm sure you're going to go into some details, but just to say, we're talking here about, you know, something that is just affects people. Burning toxic waste just affects people very negatively. Okay. I'm sure you're going to talk about the health effects, but go on, Terry Swearinger.
Okay. Maybe I should just back up a little bit and... Okay. Anyway, this was the WTI toxic waste incinerator was the very first environmental issue addressed by the new Clinton-Gore team back in 1992. Unfortunately, during the transition period, the Bush administration went ahead and approved the test burn, which is really the final hurdle in, you know, clearing the way for the incinerator to operate. The reason that we're so concerned about this particular incinerator, we do know that all incinerators emit a toxic soup of different chemicals, including lead, dioxin, cadmium, chromium, mercury, furans, just a whole range, a wide range of different toxic chemicals. And in fact, some of the chemicals that are emitted have never even been identified. But the thing about this incinerator that causes extra concern here is that it is parked right next door to a 400-student elementary school. The incinerator is located immediately on the bank of the High River, and the school is located on a bluff above the site, 1,100 feet away. So WTI smokestack is level with the front doors and windows of this elementary school. Mm-hmm. That's incredible, because I just mentioned all these toxic substances that are coming out of this incinerator. And here we have it parked next door to a school, so that these toxins are just literally raining down on this school, on these children in this community. The closest home is only 320 feet away. But here we are still with this incinerator operating, and it's 8 years after Al Gore made the promise to block its startup operations. And that's what we've been working on for the past 8 years, is trying to hold Al Gore accountable. It's really interesting. I'm sure a lot of your listeners have read or at least heard about Al Gore's Earth in the Balance. In that book, he talks about the problems of incineration. So it's not something that's foreign to him. In fact, he says that with incineration, we're actually taking our waste and dumping it on future generations, because we're putting it out into the air and it's affecting the future of these children. The second thing about his book is that we have, in order to escalate this issue and take it to the national level, we participated in what I call a very proactive campaign, using direct action and sometimes peaceful, nonviolent civil disobedience.
You were arrested 9 times, you said.
Yes, I was. I've been arrested. And the purpose of all this was to draw attention to the injustice and to try to force, you know, our own elected officials to do the right thing. I mean, it's just incredible to me. America is not so small that you have to put a toxic waste incinerator right in the middle of a poor minority Appalachian River town, and especially right next door to a school. So for the past 8 years, we've been working, as I said, to hold Al Gore accountable, trying to get him to come back to this issue and say, this is intolerable. This is just not acceptable. I believe that if Al Gore were to come to East Liverpool, Ohio, to see the site for himself, that I just don't believe that he would be able to stand on the steps of East Elementary and say, I think this is okay. I'd like to ask Al Gore, would you let your child go to school here?
Well, it is astounding, some of the things that politicians say and then the things that they do, because of that corporate money behind them. And I know that he's also Al Gore owns a lot of Occidental Oil, which certainly messes over the indigenous people and the land in South America. So there is this incredible hypocrisy that's just astounding, and it's really good to have you talking about some real concrete stuff here, because just yesterday I had a conversation with somebody who said, oh, did you read that book? How could you not vote for Gore? Because he's so much better than Bush. And I'm saying, there's, you know, look at the record.
Exactly. And I think that there are a lot of people in my position that are actually very disappointed in his record. He could come to our community and just say, you know, we can't allow this anymore. We're going to stop it. And it's an opportune time for them to do that as well, because in 1995, the WTI permit actually expired, and it's never been renewed. So it's a very opportune time to do this. That we just got word that the US EPA ombudsman has recommended to the EPA that the incinerator be immediately closed for at least 6 months in order to conduct further testing. There is a huge concern, and I believe that the risk assessment done by the US EPA was an exercise in obfuscation. It was meant to hide or obfuscate the fact that this incinerator should never have been built right next door to an elementary school. But it's amazing, because this risk assessment itself really emphasized the danger of the proximity. US EPA's risk assessment showed at least 27 possible accident scenarios that could harm or kill the children in the school 1,100 feet away. What's amazing is they didn't look at the same accident scenarios and to see what impact they would have on the children that were only 320 feet away. There were lots of flaws in the risk assessment. I think it's interesting to note that in 1995, I mentioned that the permit had expired. That same year, a few months later, the government itself became a customer of the WTI incinerator, sending Superfund waste, and there's been military waste sent there as well. So were we surprised when 2 years later the government came back and tried to tell the community that they had done this elaborate risk assessment that showed that it was safe? Absolutely not. When the government's a customer, that means liability there. And so I think that that's what they had to do. But they're actually, with risk assessments, we never advocate risk assessments because they are so easy to manipulate. In fact, a former USEPA administrator said about risk assessments, it was William Ruckelshaus, he said, risk assessment is like a captured spy, tortured enough, and it'll say anything. So we're really not interested in a six-month closure to do more testing. What our real goal is to stop this incinerator permanently. 6 months would be a nice respite, but we don't think that there are any more tests required. It's just it should never have been built there.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because we're talking about where things are at now, which is, needless to say, the most important thing. I want people to know also that even though it's not been 100%, and there's still it's just an ongoing struggle, that you indeed did have a lot of success. Given that you had a lot of success, you got the incinerators, except for the WTI. That company closed down all over the United States?
Well, yes. In 1993, we did a cross-country bus tour sponsored by Greenpeace that was actually modeled after Bill Clinton and Al Gore's bus tour during the 92 campaign. But in that tour, we visited 25 communities in 18 states where there were mostly proposed incinerators or other problems with toxic waste disposal. And in all of those, most of those communities that we visited, the proposals were defeated. There's not been another new There's not been another new commercial hazardous waste incinerator built in this country since 1992. And I believe that in large part, the citizens working to stop the WTI incinerator in East Liverpool, Ohio, we're responsible for that because we brought so much attention to the issue.
And you did it so in a very clever ways, it seems to me. I just was hearing about how you called the governor a weenie, and then you just took off on that and sold hot dogs in front of his house and dressed like hot dogs, and the press really picked up on all this.
Yeah, and that's, in a way, it's sad because I think the issue is deserving of attention without doing the comic relief type things, you know, to get attention. But, yes, we have been very successful. As I mentioned, we have participated in a direct action campaign being very proactive with this issue. And, you know, we were able to elevate it to the national level. First, on the state level, we forced the governor of Ohio, then governor of Ohio, George Voinovich, to enact a moratorium that continues to this day. And as I said, you know, at the national level, we've caused national policy changes that really benefit people across the country. And the other thing that I think is interesting is that in the 25-year history of the EPA, they had never had any guidance for citing these noxious and dangerous facilities. But in 1997, and again, we were given credit as being the driving force behind this effort by the EPA to implement a national citing criteria for the placement of these, you know, toxic hazardous waste management facilities of any kind. Ironically, WTI fits 5 out of the 8 locations identified by the EPA as being inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, here we have it still burning.
Right. And the EPA, for anybody who doesn't know, is the Environmental Protection Agency of the United States. So you're having to tell them what to do. I mean, they're just grassroots activists, basically.
Well, that's right. And I mean, you know, as I said in my presentation, we have laws in this country and we have rights, but they're not always followed. And you have to really work hard to get people to do their job. I mean, it's the sad reality. Corporations in this country and I'm sure internationally seem to have more rights than people. And we have to turn that around. We have to reclaim our democracy. We can no longer allow the corporations to define what's right and what's wrong. And so I think that's a big problem, too. I think that this whole issue, it goes beyond just a local environmental issue. I think this gets to the very heart of democracy. And we really have to work to change things, or really the future of our planet is doomed, because the corporations only care about one thing, and that's profit. They don't really care about people or our children. You know, that's it. It's profit as the bottom line. And, you know, this is a story to me in East Liverpool, Ohio, of love versus greed. On the one hand, we have the citizens acting with no hidden agendas. The only thing that we're working for is to protect these children, our children. And on the other side, we have the corporation. In fact, when you look at this particular incinerator, WTI, it's not needed, it's not wanted, and it's not safe. The only reason for their existence is profit. And yet here are, you know, children maybe being poisoned. There's one thing that I think is astounding, and that is within the last 8 months, we've learned about two young boys in the community near the incinerator who have had to have an eyeball removed due to a very rare form of cancer, retinoblastoma. Now, the normal incident rate for this is 1 in 250,000. East Liverpool only has a population of roughly 13,000, and we have two cases right near the incinerator. The cancer rate in East Liverpool, Ohio is astronomically high based on death certificates, which really represent only the tip of the iceberg in terms of incidence rates. The state health department determined that the cancer rate in East Liverpool is 40.25% higher than the national average. Wow. It's rampant. It is an epidemic. And now there are three cases of male breast cancer in our community. Three cases. Do you know how rare male breast cancer is? Now, the proponents of the incinerator would say, you know, don't be ridiculous. There's a latency period for cancer. But the point is, we already have an epidemic. Why would we want to add more pollution to an already overburdened area in an area where there's so much cancer?
Right. Well, of course, they try to, powers that be, try to blame cancer on everything but the environment. And you want to say something?
Yes, that's interesting, because I know that they always cite lifestyle choices. But the Ohio Department of Health came into the community and did a study looking at the number of smokers. And they found that the rate was not only lower for the county, lower for the state, and lower than the national average. So they can't say that all this cancer is caused by smoking.
I wonder, Terry Swergen, has this really radicalized a lot of people in your community, in this small community? Do people understand about do their eyes get opened when in terms of the dynamics of the corporate control of the politicians?
I believe so. I believe, it opened a lot of eyes, not everybody. But I think it's interesting to note that in the community where Bill Clinton and Al Gore spoke during their campaign in 1992, Weirton, West Virginia, there's a steel mill, Weirton Steel. And at the same time they made the promise to the citizens, the folks in East Liverpool, about WTI, they also talked about stopping the importation of foreign steel. That was in 92. Well, now that community, a few years ago, and it continues to this day, stood up for what they believed in. And they stood up and they took action and actually went to Washington, D.C., where people were prepared to participate in peaceful, nonviolent civil disobedience. And those people from Weirton called us and they said, thank you for showing us the way. This is the only way that we can get attention to these issues. That's terrible. But we're so concerned about our families and our livelihoods and just taking care of our families and our kids that we're willing to risk arrest, because that's all we have. This is a very poor community. The Ohio Valley is just not I wouldn't call the whole valley low income. It isn't, but people struggle to make ends meet. And this is the only thing that we have to say, look, I'm willing to put myself on the line. I'm willing to spend time in jail. Just come and do the right thing. Do what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's so good to have you talking about this into my tape recorder here, because there's also such a stereotype the press puts out, the media puts out, such a negative stereotype of activists and people who get arrested. And I wish people could see you, because it's a very different than the negative stereotype, that's for sure. Not that it should, whoever does these things and whatever the reasons are, I mean, that you just to raise people's consciousness about that is the fact.
Exactly. And you asked about, did it raise people's awareness in the area? I think it's been incredible. I know that my involvement has opened up so many doors to me. It's difficult. You have to work really hard. But on the other hand, the benefits are tremendous. I have met people that I would never have met in my life through this experience. Steelworkers, housewives, farmers, small business owners, people from the unions, people of color. It's just brought a very diverse group of people together, united under one common goal, and really it's to protect our children. I remember when we met with the US EPA Region 5 administrator when he permitted this facility, and we talked to him about the location, and he said, as a human being in my heart, I don't think the incinerator should have ever been built that close to a school. My question is, why is there a difference between what someone does as a regulator and what they do as a caring human being? I think we have to put care back into the picture. I think the people that we elect to serve us, we've got to change the dynamics. We have to recapture the value system, the morals of people, and that's what this fight is all about.
Is it you said that Hitler couldn't do things all by himself?
Oh, yes. I was saying that, evil doesn't happen because of one really bad person. Like a Hitler, there have to be a lot of other people acquiescing to the agenda of whoever is demanding this corruption. And so we have to hold those people, all of them, accountable. We have to say, we're not going to put up with this. We put you in office to represent our interests. Stop representing the corporate interests who only care about profit, and start putting your faith back into the people to determine the solutions to the problems. If you just trust us and respect us, we can make this a coalition. We can make this something where we work together, teamwork.
Yeah. It'd be a whole different thing, and that's what we want. I'd like you to speak, Terry Swearingen, about zero toxic waste, or zero waste, I think it was, that you spoke about in the few remaining minutes we have here.
Yeah. Okay, zero waste is really a very simple concept. Let me say that again. Zero waste is actually a very simple concept. It's modeling nature. It's looking at how nature handles things and emulating that. It's the two things that I think are really obvious is, number one, Mother Nature captures her energy from the sun. That's the most obvious. And number two, she doesn't make any waste at all. It's zero waste. She reuses everything. And there has to be an alliance between the communities and the industries. The community's responsibility says we are going to reuse, recycle, and compost everything. And what we can't reuse, recycle, or compost, you shouldn't be making. And that's where the energy needs to be placed inside of these industries. There are a really tremendous number of bright people working for these companies, and they should be focusing on that right now. And it can be done. There are companies, Hewlett-Packard is one. They're using this. And I think it's in New Zealand, I believe, that 38% of the municipalities have developed zero waste strategies. So it is something that's possible. It's real. We just have to demand that these industries do it and stop generating all this toxic waste that's poisoning us and poisoning our planet.
Really? And so many people don't even seem to understand this. I had just had a little encounter with somebody in the supermarket the other day where I said, I don't need another plastic bag. And he took it that he'd already gotten. All it was in his hand. It was totally clean, and put it in the garbage. And I said, that the whole point was not to do that. And he had I said, do you know about how plastic is not biodegradable usually? And he said, no.
Well, and not only that, not only is it not biodegradable, but then when you put it in an incinerator, that's really where the dioxin comes from, because the plastic all contains chlorine, and then in the burning process, you form dioxin. And I think it's so important for people to know that dioxin is one of the most potent chemicals known to man. And right now, the US EPA released its latest dioxin findings, and they're saying that the average person's risk of developing cancer from current background levels is between 1 in 1,000 and 1 in 100, actually moving more towards 1 in 100 if you eat beef and dairy products, because that's where the dioxin accumulates. And if you live near a source of dioxin, like an incinerator, you can multiply that risk by 2 to 3 times. That's incredible.
I hear the mother's milk in the United States, or all over the whole world, just about is toxic now.
Yes, I don't know the number of chemicals, but there are, somewhere over 100 chemicals that are found in breast milk and human tissue. I just think it's totally incredible. And another thing that I think is incredible is that the only way that a woman has of purging her body of these toxic chemicals is to have a baby, because then it's passed on to the child, or to breastfeed. And that's wrong. When our food supply is not safe, then that's when it's time to say, hey, look, we've got to take care of this problem. Or, you know, we are destroying the planet, and there's no hope for the future.
Yeah, well, there's certainly no hope for futures for humans if we're just destroying ourselves and destroying our nests. It's pretty stupid.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, Terry Swearingen, if you would give contact information and for how to find you if people want to find out more about your work and have you speak or whatever.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, the first thing I'd like to say is, you know, call the vice president and tell him that this is an abomination and that it can't continue.
Contact.
Oh, yes, contact information. I'm Terry Swearingen. You can reach me at my email address, which is tswearin@weir.net. That's tswearin@weir.net.
Any phone number, anything for people that don't have computers or mailing address?
I work out of my home. My phone number is 304-387-0574. And get that call in to Al Gore.
Yeah. So I think that it sounds like you wouldn't really advise voting for Al Gore.
Well, you know what? I try not to get into, those issues. I mean, there's still some time left. There's still how many days till the election? Certainly I wouldn't make the same mistake twice if something isn't done before the election. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, I guess I'll just say my own opinion, which is check into these folks' records. I mean, really, their records are pretty much the same, and we have a chance to do something different. And people have fought very long and hard, and are fighting all over the world to have the vote. And it would be nice if you'd vote for Nader. So I don't have anything to lose here, so I'm going to say that. And I want to thank you so much, Terry Swearingen, for your great work. And my name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening.